Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, October 20th, 2025. From the front page, healthcare, Illinois' ACA market goes solo. State exits federal exchange platform amid U.S. budget stalemate by Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. People in Illinois who buy health insurance through the Affordable Care Act marketplace are likely to see big increases in the cost of their premiums next year. But state officials are encouraging them to reach out for help before they decide to drop their coverage. "We're really encouraging people. Don't walk away. Come and talk to a navigator," Illinois Insurance Director Ann Gillespie said in an interview this week. "Make an appointment to talk to a navigator because there are over 1,100 plans that we're going to be offering on the marketplace. There might be an option that will be affordable for you." Open enrollment for the 2026 plan year begins November 1 and runs through January 15th. This year will be the first year in which Illinois residents will use a state-based online platform, Get Covered Illinois, to shop for their plans. "Last year we were a state-based market, but on the federal platform still. It was our transition year," Gillespie said. "So last year was technically the first year of the state-based marketplace. This year we're on our own platform for the first time." Federal budget battle. The premium hike is the result of a federal budget change that was included in President Donald Trump's domestic policy agenda, known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. That provision ends the enhanced tax credits that subsidize the cost of premiums for people who meet income guidelines. Premium tax credits have always been part of the Affordable Care Act since it was passed in 2010 as a tool to reduce the out-of-pocket cost of plans sold on the exchange. They were available to households with incomes up to 400% of the federal poverty level, or $128,600 in 2025. Congress first passed the enhanced credits in 2021 as part of the American Rescue Plan Act, an economic package passed in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. They were renewed in 2022 as part of another pandemic-related law, the Inflation Reduction Act. The ending of those enhanced credits is now at the center of the ongoing federal budget stalemate in Congress, which prompted the partial shutdown of the federal government that began October 1st. That day marked the start of a new federal fiscal year. But so far, Congress has been unable to pass the spending bills needed to fund most of the government's day-to-day operating costs. Republicans, who hold majorities in both chambers of Congress, have proposed passing a short-term continuing resolution that would keep the government running at currently approved levels, which would include the scheduled ending of the enhanced tax credits. But most Democrats have insisted that any new spending plan includes restoring the enhanced tax credit. Impact in Illinois. In January 2025, an estimated 466,000 people in Illinois were covered by ACA marketplace plans. Of those, Gillespie said about 90% received some amount of tax credit to subsidize their premiums. But she said ending the enhanced credit could cause people's out-of-pocket premiums to rise, possibly forcing many people to drop their coverage. "Premiums are going to go up nationwide as a result of this," she said. "People are going to be seeing their premiums increase double, triple. In some states, they're going to quadruple." "You could argue that they were just for COVID," Gillespie said, "but I look at it as it was one more step into making sure we have coverage for everybody in the country, and taking it away now, after people have become dependent on it, is really a cruel blow to people that are facing price increases from inflation." state-based exchange. Before Governor J.B. Pritzker named Gillespie to lead the insurance department in 2024, she served in the state Senate and was the lead sponsor of the 2023 legislation that called for setting up a state-based exchange. Before that, Illinois residents had to use the federal portal, healthcare.com, to enroll in ACA insurance. Gillespie said that that bill came about in response to federal policy changes during the first Trump administration, which included shortening the open enrollment period and reducing funding for employing navigators who helped people find coverage plans to suit their needs. The value of a state-based exchange is that you've got some independence from the federal administration's changes and the policy shifts, she said. So as a state-based exchange, you've got a little more ability to customize the plan offerings for the residents of your state. You'll have a little more leeway with setting special enrollment periods. Gillespie said starting in 2026, there will be two additional enrollment opportunities under the state-based exchange. One will be a pregnancy open enrollment, she said. So if you find out that you're pregnant in between open enrollments, we can have a special enrollment period so you can get coverage. The second opportunity will be tied to filing individual tax returns. There will be a space on your tax return where you can check to indicate that you'd like enrollment materials for the state-based market, she said. From page 3, Police Warn of Text Scam by Tony Reed, Decatur. Police are warning families to be on their guard against smooth-talking texting scammers who just drained the bank account of a Decatur man. Sergeant Brandon Rolfs of the Decatur Police Department said the victim, aged in his 70s, was conned into believing his Apple account had, ironically, already been compromised by thieves. Unfortunately, this gentleman called a number that was texted to him, and then he is talking to some unknown person from an unknown state or country who portray themselves as if working on behalf of Apple, said Rolfs, speaking Sunday. And they get information from this victim for his banking account linked to his Apple account. What happened very quickly after this phone call is a series of multi-hundred dollar transactions that were drained from this victim's bank account. Rolfs said the scammers break down people's natural suspicions by conveying a sense of urgency combined with a willingness to assist. We often hear victims say, "I knew better. I've read about these things in the news, but I got so panicked when they told me," Rolfs said. And that's what these criminals rely on. It's always high pressure and, "Look, we can help you. We can reverse these charges, but we only have a limited amount of time to do this." They make you feel that sense of urgency and panic, and a lot of times it overrides your good judgment. Rolfs said anyone receiving such a message should not respond and instead look up the proper customer service number for whatever company is being quoted and query them what is happening with them. Do not give out any personal or account information in response to any random call or text. Also on the front page, biofuel output trends upward. Renewable diesel leads growth as industry endures speed bumps, by Benjamin Harold, Illinois Farmer Today. U.S. biofuel production continues to trend upward, although within the overall trend there are variations in the types of biofuels produced. Ethanol production was 16.2 billion gallons in 2024, climbing above pre-pandemic production levels. Biomass diesel, including biodiesel and renewable diesel, reached 5 billion gallons. Lane Howard, director of biofuels for the National Corn Growers Association, said U.S. ethanol production saw exponential growth in 2008 through 10, as the renewable fuel standard boosted the industry and blending increased. What we've seen since is what I'd call steady growth, Howard said. Since 2021, we have seen about 1 billion gallons of growth in production. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, U.S. ethanol production was mostly level in 2017, 18, and 19. After 15.8 billion gallons of ethanol production in 2019, the total fell to 13.9 billion gallons in 2020, as the coronavirus pandemic cut into fuel consumption. But the production rose to 15 billion gallons in 2021, 15.4 in 2022, 15.6 in 2023, and 16.2 billion gallons in 2024. Howard said updating regulations to allow for E15 gas blended with 15% ethanol to be sold during the summer months would help boost production more. That's been the biggest hurdle to us as far as E15 adoption, he said. Howard said growing ethanol production is a mix of policy, investing in infrastructure, and increasing exports. It's all of the above, he said. One way to grow exports is to talk with countries about the benefits of ethanol. There are countries moving to higher blends of ethanol, he said. The ethanol industry is important for farmers, since a significant amount of each year's corn crop goes to ethanol production. Howard says he expects U.S. ethanol production to continue to increase. I think steady growth is likely, he said. Jeff Earle, Director of State Governmental Affairs at Clean Fuels Alliance America, said the trend has been positive for biomass-based diesel. Biodiesel and renewable diesel continue to trend up, he said. Renewable diesel, which can be made with soybean oil, continues to be a larger share of the overall biomass-based diesel industry. Early on, biodiesel was the only renewable fuel for the heavy industry until the renewable diesel took off. In recent years, the shares of soybean oil for biofuels has increased, and renewable diesel now makes up more of the biomass-based diesel total than biodiesel. Renewable diesel, that will be where we see the most growth. He said growing infrastructure will help increase biofuel production, as well as supportive state and federal policies. We continue to see the expansion of soybean crush, Earle said. Federal policy proves challenging. There have been some challenges in production this year as the industry awaits the new renewable fuel standard numbers. This past year has been a bit of a struggle as we try to iron out some federal policy, Earle said. In addition to federal policy, Earle said state policies such as tax credits, support for building infrastructure, and state biofuel percentage standards help grow the industry. Missouri, Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska all have some sort of tax incentive program in place that has driven a lot of the biofuel demand in the Midwest, he said. Also, Western states, led by California, have implemented low-carbon fuel standards that have helped grow biofuel consumption and production. The growth of the industry is due to a number of factors, including support from a variety of people. We have a story for both sides, Earle said. If you're a lawmaker who cares about the environment, clean air, and decarbonization, we have a story for you. If you're a lawmaker who cares about economic development, we have a story for you, too. He said the biofuel industry is critical for farmers. It's hugely important, Earle said. 20 or 30 years ago, before this industry took off, farmers were having to figure out what to do with this soybean oil that wasn't going into fuel. It continues to be a huge value-added industry for farmers. Also on the front page, things are getting worse. No King's rally returns to Decatur to protest Trump and stand up for democracy. by Danette Beckett, Decatur. Saturday afternoon's rain may have motivated the crowds at the second No Kings rally on the west side of the Decatur Civic Center. People are going to be here no matter what, said organizer Wolfgang Stubblefield. A line of demonstrators, some holding signs, others waving flags, a few dressed in costumes, gathered Saturday afternoon at the corner of North Franklin and East El Dorado Streets, near the Decatur Civic Center marquee. A microphone and speaker system were located and set up, allowing community members, local politicians, and families the opportunity to voice their opinions and encourage others in their causes. Aaron Valentine was one of those who held a sign that said, "I want democracy for my grandkids. We don't need kings," she said, "and I think things are getting worse." The Associated Press has reported that President Donald Trump's Republican Party has called the No King events hate America rallies. Trump himself said in a Fox News interview before the rallies that they're referring to me as a king. I'm not a king. The AP reported that demonstrators packed places like New York City, Times Square, the historic Boston Commons, Chicago's Grant Park, Washington, D.C., and hundreds of smaller public spaces. In central Illinois, rallies were also held in Bloomington, Charleston, Effingham, Springfield, Peoria, Monticello, Urbana, and beyond. Throughout the country, over 2,700 No Kings rallies were held. A peaceful crowd gathered for Decatur's first No Kings rally on June 14th. Other rallies around the country were organized to counter what organizers said were President Donald Trump's plans to honor his 79th birthday, Flag Day, and the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army founding. Saturday's nationwide rallies were another show of protest against Trump's ongoing administrative actions, organizers said. Stubblefield organized both No Kings rallies in Decatur. "The last one was pretty much impromptu. We threw it together in days," he said. "This time, people wanted to show up so badly." Stubblefield said he wanted Saturday's event to be focused on the city. "For Decatur, we're a little bit abandoned out here," he said. "From a billionaire perspective, we don't have anyone coming to give us a ton of jobs." Safety was important to both rallies. Organizers relied on Will Wetzel to provide security for Saturday's event. He encouraged the crowds to stay out of the street, pick up litter, and use crosswalks. He also distributed bottles of water. "At the end of the day, our job is to keep everybody safe," he said. "But our point is to be out here to use our First Amendment rights." Decatur resident and Navy veteran Michael Loud, 84, said he wanted to attend the event to protest to what he sees Trump is doing to the country. "I took an oath to defend my country from all its enemies, foreign and domestic," he said. "And he is definitely a domestic enemy. It makes me cry." Loud's wife, Fran, 82, sat beside him as drivers drove by, honking their car horns in support. "And they've given us thumbs up," she said. "It tells us people are listening, and they agree with us." The protesters had witnessed a few signs from others who opposed their views. "We just do a thumbs up back at them," Fran Loud said. From page 3, "Decatur woman killed, three others injured in early morning crash," by Danette Beckett, Decatur. A 26-year-old woman from Decatur has died after an early morning crash. According to a press release issued by the Decatur Police Department, officers were sent at 2:48 a.m. Saturday to the scene of a crash at Grand Avenue and Main Street. The initial investigation found a white 2024 International box truck was traveling south on Main Street at Grand Avenue with a green light, while a red 2013 Ford Focus was traveling east on Grand Avenue at Main Street with a red light. The driver of the Ford disobeyed the red traffic signal at the intersection and collided with the truck, who had the right of way, Sergeant Stephen P. Hagemeyer wrote in the release. The driver of the box truck, a 68-year-old man from Rock Island, was not injured. The 26-year-old Decatur woman was the driver of the Ford. Three other Decatur women, ages 18, 22, and 24, were passengers in the vehicle. The driver of the Ford was transported to a local hospital, where she was pronounced deceased, Hagemeyer wrote. The three passengers in the Ford were transported to a local hospital, where they were treated for non-life-threatening injuries. The driver of the truck did not appear to be under the influence of alcohol or drugs, police said. Toxicology results on the driver of the Ford are pending. The crash is being investigated by members of the DPD Fatal Accident Investigation Team. From page 6 of the Monday, October 20th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review National and World News Digest. Ukraine strikes major gas processing plant. Kyiv, Ukraine. Ukrainian drones struck a major gas processing plant in southern Russia, sparking a fire and forcing it to suspend its intake of gas from Kazakhstan, Russian, and Kazakh authorities said Sunday. U.S. President Donald Trump, meanwhile, suggested that Kyiv may have to give up territory in exchange for an end to Moscow's more than 3.5-year invasion, in the latest of apparent reversals on how to pursue peace. The Orenburg plant is part of a production and processing complex that is one of the world's largest facilities of its kind, with an annual capacity of 45 billion cubic meters. It handled gas, condensate from Kazakhstan's fields along Orenburg's own oil and gas fields. Houthi rebels detain several UN workers. Cairo. Iranian-backed Houthi rebels detained 24 UN employees Sunday, a day after they raided another UN facility in the capital of Sana'a, a UN official said. Jean Alam, a spokesman for the UN Resident Coordinator for Yemen, told the Associated Press that UN staffers were detained inside the facility in Sana'a's southwestern neighborhood of Hadaa. He said those detained Sunday include 5 Yemenis and 15 international staff. He said the rebels released an additional 11 UN staffers after questioning. He said the UN was in contact with the Houthis and other parties to resolve this serious situation as swiftly as possible, end the detention of all personnel, and restore full control over its facilities in Sana'a. Kaiser Permanente. A planned 5-day strike by thousands of registered nurses and other Kaiser Permanente healthcare workers in California, Hawaii, and Oregon ended Sunday, union leaders and the healthcare system said. According to a statement from the company, plans call for bargaining to resume this week with a focus on economic issues. Ceasefire. Afghanistan and Pakistan, embroiled in fighting that has killed dozens of people and injured hundreds, pledged Sunday to respect a ceasefire. The truce, mediated by Qatar and Turkey, took effect immediately and was intended to pause hostilities. Mississippi. A frenzy of gunfire after a high school football game this month in the small Mississippi Delta town of Leland has claimed a 7th victim Friday, when 25-year-old Ebony Williams died of her wounds about a week after the shooting, medical officials said. At least 9 people have been arrested. Oklahoma. An argument at a private off-campus party escalated into a shooting early Sunday outside an Oklahoma State University residence hall, wounding 3 people, including a student, school police said. No arrests have been made. Vatican. Pope Leo XIV canonized Venezuela's beloved Doctor of the Poor, José Gregorio Hernández, Sunday, before tens of thousands of people, offering the South American nation its first saint and a reason to celebrate among a years-long economic crisis and new tensions with the United States. Defection. South Korea's military said Sunday that it took into custody a North Korean soldier who crossed the border early in the day. The soldier expressed a desire to defect, the Joint Chiefs of Staff said. Jewel thieves hit the Louvre Museum. Daytime heist took about 4 minutes. Priceless items seized, by Thomas Adamson, Associated Press. Paris. In a minutes-long strike Sunday inside the world's most visited museum, thieves rode a basket lift up the Louvre's facade, forced a window, smashed display cases, and fled with priceless Napoleonic jewels, officials said. The daylight heist, about 30 minutes after opening, with visitors already inside, was among the highest-profile museum thefts in living memory, and comes as staff complained that crowding and thin staffing are straining security. The theft unfolded just 270 yards from the Mona Lisa, in what Culture Minister Rachida Dati described as a professional four-minute operation. One object, the emerald-set imperial crown of Napoleon III's wife, Empress Eugenie, contained more than 1,300 diamonds, was later found outside the museum, French authorities said. It was reportedly recovered broken. Images from the scene showed confused tourists being steered out of the glass pyramid and adjoining courtyards as officers closed nearby streets along the Seine. No one was hurt. Also visible was a lift braced to the Seine-facing facade near a construction zone, since removed. At the thief's entry point, and observers said, a striking vulnerability for a palace museum. About 9:30 a.m., several intruders forced the window, cut panes with a disc cutter, and went straight for the glass display cases, officials said. Interior Minister Laurent Nunez said the crew entered from the outside using a basket lift via the riverfront facade where construction is underway to reach the hall with a 23-item royal collection. Their target was the gilded Apollon Gallery, where the crown diamonds are displayed, including the Regent, the Sancy, and the Hortensia. The thieves smashed two display cases and fled on motorbikes, Nunez said. Alarms brought Louvre agents to the room, forcing the intruders to bolt, but the theft was already done. Eight objects were taken, according to officials, a sapphire diadem, necklace, and single earring, an emerald necklace and earrings, a reliquary brooch, Empress Eugenie's diadem, and her large corsage bow brooch, a prized 19th century imperial ensemble. It's a major robbery, Nunez said, noting that security measures at the Louvre had been strengthened in recent years and would be reinforced further as part of the museum's upcoming overhaul plan. Officials said security upgrades include new generation cameras, perimeter detection, and a new security control room. But critics say the measures came far too late. The Louvre closed for the rest of Saturday for forensic investigation. Daylight robberies during public hours are rare. Pulling one off inside the Louvre with visitors present ranks among Europe's most audacious in recent history. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Monday, October 20th. Please stay tuned.